This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 on this beautiful Wednesday morning. Who knows what's going to happen at 8:30? Who knows what's going to happen at 3:30? I think it's kind of silly to talk about what happens at 8:35 and 8:40 and 9 o'clock and who's reacting to what, because to quote this investor, this Wall Street analyst, clients are confused. Even professional traders are struggling right now with all the constant changes related to the tariff shifts. There's a change every 15 minutes. A headline every 15 minutes, it's a bit scary. With that, we're joined by our friend Jose Bautista, professor of economics at Xavier University. How are you, doctor?
Fine, thank you, Tommy. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for taking the time with us. When it comes to, and I mentioned this before you came on, we are on a roller coaster. Like it or not, you can enjoy the ride or you can close your eyes. Either way, it's not like it used to be in Washington and Wall Street and the president. And first of all, I saw this coming. I got a lot of money out of the market and put it into something safer because I didn't know what was going to happen with tariffs. For people that have not done that, that are worried about their 401k, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that they should go and consult with their financial advisors, because they're the ones who keep close tabs on movements of the market. There are different types of investors. They're those short term investors, who are looking to take a look at the market, and then when there's a upward spike in the market, to seize upon the capital gains there. And then they're the long run investors, those who are looking for a comfortable nest egg in the future. So you can always be cautious, but again, it all depends upon what type of investor. Those who are looking in the short run definitely are going to do wise decisions like you did, and play it safe and liquidate part of your portfolios.
So from the economist standpoint, as it relates to what's going on Wall Street, sometimes people see the red numbers at the end of the day, and they think it's the end of the world. They see green numbers, they think happy days are here again. The truth is often in between. Explain, if you will, what's been happening on Wall Street the last 2 days. And it is a market, so the likelihood of it coming back with people swooping in to get bargains, and take us through all of that, Professor, if you can.
Well, again, when the stock market goes down, obviously there's a sell-off, right? Because again, demand is increasing for the stocks. That's more of an interpretation of a short run expectation that profitability is going to sag in the short run. Now, just take a look at the numbers right now. There's a 370 point increase in the Dow. Mm-hmm. All right. So again, our happy days here again. Again, it goes back to this volatility. What people really don't the conclusion that many analysts are going to, because it makes headlines, is that this talk about Taft is only relegated to the supply side of the economy. Keep in mind, what people forget that the U.S. economy is driven, 68% of GDP is household spending. And until we see the reaction of the actual reaction, not the expectation, not consumer confidence, the actual response of the household sector to policy decisions, then we can see the impact on the entire economy.
traditionally, is there a correlation that can be made between Wall Street and household spending, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, because, again, Wall Street, again, the movement in the stock market is dependent upon expectations of future profits of the entire private sector. Household spending obviously depends on current rates of inflation, the amount of disposable income, the amount of which is what economists call real income. And so, again, there obviously, you know, if one sees one's portfolio, tanking, and one is near retirement, obviously the day-to-day consumption, or personal consumption expenditures are going to vary, as opposed to someone who is, in the prime of their earning years and looking to, even add to their portfolios and increase their savings at this time.
Everything is looked at through a political prism. We'll pick it up here. We come back. Yesterday, social media buzz. People that favor President Trump say, yeah, there's pain, but there's a long game being played here. We're going to all benefit when it's over. People that are against him saying that, and a Republican saying that the economy was destroyed in a matter of weeks. I don't think either one of those is true. I don't think we know yet, and we'll talk with Professor Batista when we come back about at what point do we find out if these plans are working or not, or if they have any difference or not. 821 Traffic Now, WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL 825, talking to our friend Jose Batista, professor of economics at Xavier University. So, Professor, the Wall Street is not the economy. Stock market is not the economy. There are a lot of different things that make up the economy. When it comes to tariffs, when it comes to inflation, when it comes to prices, consumer spending, at what point, first of all, where are we now, and at what point will we know where we're either headed or are going or are?
The United States economy is a very resilient, probably the most resilient economy in the world. What these tariffs are aimed to do is not to be a long-run economic policy. It's really aimed towards creating an incentive for manufacturing to return to the United States. This is a problem that goes back some 40 years, when back in the 1980s, U.S. manufacturers, because of changes in technology, essentially gave up the idea of revamping the plant and equipment to foreign manufacturers. Perfect example is the automobile industry, where Japan was using robots, U.S. car makers weren't. And so therefore it took a while until we lost our competitive edge in the automobile industry to the Japanese. So the idea is to return manufacturing here to the United States. Now, today, I just saw in the Wall Street Journal, they said that the impact of these tariffs are going to be mainly on, they said, three particular items: canned goods, automobiles, and washing machines. Now, again, if you bring it back to how are these all going to be impacted, again, you have to take a look at how will households respond to this? And as there's a movement, a greater, more conscientious effort on individuals to move away from processed foods, then again, the impact on canned goods is probably going to decrease. In the automobile industry, it's going to be up to the U.S. automobile manufacturers to rev up their marketing and to demonstrate that U.S. manufactured products are a whole lot more superior, economy-wise, and again, efficiently operational-wise. In terms of washing machines, well, that's a very competitive market, and so therefore, the buyer will always go to the, will always gravitate to the more wiser price for their money. So again, a lot of it, comes full circle. A lot a lot of factors are interdependent on other factors.
When it comes to labor costs, and we'll wrap it up with this because we're almost out of time, is there any way manufacturing returns to the United States without the price of products going up because of what you would have to pay for labor, unless it's some kind of robotic thing, which would mean there are no jobs being created, it's just manufacturing? Take me through that quickly, Professor, if you can.
Yeah, very quickly, a lot of that depends on the increase in productivity. As AI becomes more and more part of the business culture, we're going to see greater amounts of productivity in terms of the labor market. Greater productivity will result in greater output. Greater output means that prices on wages don't have to necessarily go up as astronomical as they are when you had a limited amount of human capital in the labor force.
Which means the price will not go up, but that doesn't mean more jobs if manufacturing comes back. Am I hearing that right?
To the extent to which, again, there's still some uncertainty in terms of the usage of AI, then, again, there's a lot of uncertainty there. We're still not sure.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time, as always. Jose Batista, Professor of Economics at Xavier. When we come back, we're going to talk about AI and powering AI and how much power these things use and who's going to wind up paying for it. 8:30, time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9. Last fall, Microsoft made arrangements to restart Three Mile Island to power some of their AI centers. And Three Mile Island was the site of the worst nuclear disaster in the history of America, but not in the history of nuclear power, and it was not Chernobyl, just to clear that up. But that did get me to thinking about who powers all of these AI plants, who's going to pay for that. Ari Pesco joins us, director of the Harvard Electricity Law Initiative. Talk about that. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Let's talk about these AI centers and why. What kind of power needs do they have, and why is it so much?
I mean, they have massive power needs. We are seeing some of these big tech companies planning facilities that will consume gigawatts of energy. So just to give you some perspective on that, the city of New Orleans, on the hottest summer day when everybody's blasting their air conditioning, consumes about 1 gigawatt of power. And Meta, the Facebook company, is right now planning a data center in Louisiana that's going to double that energy consumption.
To 2 gigs?
Well, they actually aren't saying publicly precisely how much, but we know that Entergy Louisiana, the big utility there, is planning to build more than 2 gigawatts of natural gas-fired power plants that they say are needed to power this new facility that'll come online in a few years.
Do you know, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds on this, but what is it that, why the big power demand? I don't understand the way all this works, Professor, so hold my hand like I'm
Sure. I mean, look, data centers are not new. We've been accessing the internet for a couple decades now, a few decades, and they're an essential piece of infrastructure that allows us to do all the things we do online. But since ChatGPT came out a couple years ago in late 2022, we've really seen an explosion of this data center growth, and it's this race to develop artificial intelligence that really seems to be driving these giant data centers. And from my understanding, it's the development of these AI models, which is really a huge, just power hungry task that is causing a handful of these companies, Google, Meta, and OpenAI, to really pursue these just massive facilities.
So let me tell a story here, Professor. Bear with me if you can. Something happened here in the New Orleans area years ago. Then Archbishop Hannon wrote a piece in the Clarion Herald, which is the Catholic newspaper, urging voters to approve a millage issue for the Sewage and Water Board in Orleans Parish that would improve the drainage of Algiers. And I thought to myself, and this is even before I was in radio, that's odd. Why wouldn't an archbishop get involved with this? And then it was explained that it was a human values thing, that you wanted people to have proper drainage. Well, a little bit digging later, and if I'm wrong on this, please, anybody provide the evidence and I'll correct it. We later learned that the drainage millage was to put the drainage into English Turn, an upscale development in Algiers. that Nicholas Development Corporation built, and the Archdiocese sold the land to Nicholas Development Corporation, which explains why they were in favor of that issue. And the reason I bring all of that up is we might be talking about the same thing here, where it might improve the overall power generating capability, but it's for one specific thing and everybody winds up paying for it. Am I on to anything here at all or not?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be what's going on here. We just put out a big report trying to explain how the public is actually going to be paying for the power of really the world's wealthiest corporations, these big technology companies that are worth trillions of dollars. And it's because of the way that we set energy prices. I mean, everybody, you have a utility down there called Entergy, and they have a monopoly, and everybody has to pay Entergy every month. And it's pretty complicated how we set rates, but the bottom line is that we use utilities to socialize the cost of reliable power. And so when the utility expands its system, we all pay for it. Now, we're in a little bit of a different situation here, because usually when we expand the system, we're doing it piece by piece as sort of society grows, and we're trying to benefit everyone by ensuring that we have, you know, reliable power supply for all new homes and businesses. But here, the growth is really being driven by just a couple of these companies, and they ought to be paying for it. Now, in many cases, the companies claim they are paying for it themselves, but often, and as is the case for this new data center in Louisiana that I mentioned, the contracts are totally secret, and nobody's able to take a look at them. So Entergy is going to build these plants. It's going to...
The contract is secret. The Public Service Commission has nothing to do with this?
Well, right now, Entergy is saying that the Public Service has no authority to even look at the contract. And they're telling the same thing to Mississippi regulators as well, where it's Amazon that's come in and is building a similarly giant new data center there.
So historically, let me take a break, digest what we've heard so far. We can come back and talk about historically, as industries develop in the United States, they need power. Who pays for that? In exchange, I guess, jobs are created. I don't know how many jobs are going to be created here. And in this case, unlike the drainage issue that specifically benefited one neighborhood, does everybody then use this data center? Does everybody draw on this? So in essence, they're paying for their own access to the internet. You can explain all that when we come back. We're talking to Professor Ari Pesko, a director of the Harvard Electricity Law Initiative, and it's very interesting what's going on with Meta planning to build that $10 billion data center in Louisiana. I know sometimes they have promises of permanent jobs that turn out to be 9 or 10 jobs, and politicians love to create jobs, and sometimes they don't want people to look at the back end of how much it's really costing. 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. Ari Pesko is our guest. Tommy Tucker, WWL, director of the Harvard Electricity Law Initiative. So Meta, which is the parent company this week at least of Facebook and Instagram, picked Northeast Louisiana to build a $10 billion artificial intelligence data center. Governor Jeff Landry calls it a win, says it's going to result in 500 or more direct new jobs, more than 1,000 indirect jobs, and 5,000 construction workers at peak. Everybody wants industry in Louisiana, but at what cost? There are tax incentives involved, but there's also that they're going to need a buttload of power. I'm sorry, Ari, that's not a technical term, but a lot of power, double that of a hot summer day in New Orleans, and that's every day to power this AI facility. Is that right?
That's right. Although Entergy won't tell anyone precisely how much power it will need, they have told us how much of new power plant capacity they'd like to build.
And this is so. Correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you're an attorney. So if what's happening is the ratepayers of Louisiana will be paying for the plants that produce power exclusively for this AI center, and in exchange, then the state gets jobs. So the people, tell me if I'm wrong there.
Well, they might. You know, we don't know. What Entergy says is that Meta will pay for this. But what Entergy's plan is to include the costs of this new infrastructure, which is about $3 billion, in what's called its rate base, which is part of the sort of formula it uses to generate the rates that it charges to consumers in Louisiana. So apparently there's a deal for Meta to sort of pay Entergy back. But again, we haven't nobody's seen that contract, so we don't know what's in it. We don't know what'll happen. For example, let's just say this whole AI boom fizzles out and Meta decides in a few years, you know, we're actually not going to move forward with this project, will the folks of Louisiana be on the hook for this $3 billion of costs? We don't know.
The Public Service Commission at some point, I know energy operates under a fixed rate of return. At some point, if Meta does pay back energy, they would have to refund that to the ratepayers or not?
Well, again, we don't know exactly how this deal is supposed to work because Entergy doesn't want to file it with the public, doesn't want to show what's in this contract.
So the problem is transparency and what exactly the deal says. Is that accurate?
That's definitely a problem.
And what happens from here, Professor? Anybody filing suit over this or what?
Right now, the Public Service Commission is reviewing Entergy's plan to build these new plants. So that's something that the commission does have authority over, and that's right now before them.
Devil's in the details. Thank you. Appreciate your time, Professor.
All right. Thank you.
Pesco, director of the Harvard Electricity Law Initiative. All for development, all for jobs, but again, at what cost? The film industry gets a lot of heat because people say, well, with the tax credits you're giving them, the taxpayers are actually paying the salaries. Well, is this any different here? Film industry gets a lot of attention, but a lot of that goes on. We'll talk to Mike Dettelier about the Saints and their new free agent when we come back here on WWL.